Well, it is lovely to see a sea of familiar faces and also some new faces as well. It's been lovely to walk this week alongside you. But of course, if we're looking at hard topics, how can we not look at the topic of grief and loss? And it's not necessarily the easiest way to end a week, but we hope, or I hope, it will be a very hope-filled way to end a week. Because whilst loss and grief is hard, the Lord is still at work in us, loving and comforting and journeying with us in the pain of it. Loss is, well, it's grief is the loss of something or someone we treasure. As a colleague of mine says, not all loss is lamented. No one laments the loss of their overdraft. No one is sad that their mortgage has gone away. A backache going is not a moment to cry. Some losses are good. But of course, many losses, the loss of something precious, the loss of someone we hold dear, really is a deep pain. And within this room, we will have people who have lost a loved one. A spouse, a parent, a child, a friend. We will have people who have lost a job or a role, possibly in ways that have been deeply, deeply painful. People who have lost a community or a network, maybe as you've had to move across the country, across the world, possibly for circumstances that were not of your choosing. Some of us may have lost a home. Some of us may have lost a pet. And whilst maybe there is that little voice inside us saying, but it's only a pet, the grief is still there. And there is a whole host more of losses that we will have faced. This morning, we will be focusing on the loss of bereavement, but everything we say will be applicable to all those other kinds of losses as well. Everything we say can be transferred into even the loss of understanding somebody as they have changed through illness, through deterioration of a condition they have. But we're talking mainly about the loss of a precious person. And we'll be acknowledging that loss hurts, grief hurts, because it is not as we were designed to live. Genesis 1 and 2, there was no grief because there was no loss. We were designed for eternity. And of course, in Revelation 21 and 22, we will circle back to that time where there is no more loss, where there is just life and joy praising around the throne. But at the moment, we're not in those bookends. At the moment, we are in the middle. Post-Genesis 3, post the fall, where death and decay is a part and parcel of our life, a deeply painful part of our life. On one level, we expect it, don't we? We know that at some point in our life, we're going to experience loss. And yet, we are never really prepared. It always hurts. It cuts deeply. But one thing I think we want to get our head around right at the start of this seminar is that the grief we feel, that overwhelming, painful grief, is not the enemy. Death is the enemy. Grief is the completely reasonable, completely rational, completely right response to the presence of death, which is wrong, which has no place here, which one day will go. Why do I start there? Because I think a lot of us, when we're grieving, we just want the feelings to go away. We don't want to feel this bad anymore. But actually, what we need is for death to go away. And one day it will. But while death is here, grieving is right. It's painful, and there are ways of navigating it, and we'll look at those in just a little while. But dodging grief isn't going to help us. Grief is the right response. And so what we're going to look at today is not how to avoid grief or to run away from it, but how to engage with it with our eyes on Christ in ways that are healthy and wholesome, godly and wise. It's a short seminar. We're not going to be looking at the particularly complex areas of grief that I know some of you may be facing. But at the start, I also just wanted to acknowledge that they're there. For some of us, there has been an untimely loss. The loss of a child. The loss that just doesn't seem right on any level. A loss of someone in their late 90s is deeply painful, but there is almost an expectedness. But someone of a miscarriage, a stillbirth, someone that is 5, 10, 15, it's out of season. It's out of time. It's not what we expect, even in this fallen world. Some of us may have experienced a violent loss, had a relative in the forces, or someone that has been a victim of crime. For some of us, there has been maybe an ambiguous loss. A loss, we've seen recently in the news, haven't we, of a missing person that took a long time to find. There's that period of not knowing. Are they with us? Are they not? There's a loss, but not a definite loss. For others, there's a complex loss. That might be something along the lines of the death of someone that has been abusive to us. On one level, there is a sense of relief that they are gone. On another level, a deep pain because we still love them. Part of us in our hearts still wanted them. There's a complexity there. There's repeated loss. Some of us will know the pain of repeated miscarriages. Some of us will know what it's like to lose a number of family members quite shortly after each other. Some of us maybe have experienced something like a refugee experience, losing family, losing home, losing status, losing culture. One thing after another. And we can't look at the complexity of those things today. There just isn't time. But if you are in that place, please know that you are seen and you are heard. And what we are going to do today, I hope, will be a small contribution to helping you walk that path. But please do speak with those near you if you need more. But let's do some talking together, and we'll do a bit of feedback from this from the floor as well. So a microphone will be coming round. We all know what it's like to grieve. But we all have very different experiences of grief. So just take 2 minutes with the person next to you if you feel able to chat about this topic. What does it feel like to grieve? We'll have a little bit of feedback. We will keep the feedback relatively short. It's one of those seminars where hearing people's stories is profound and helpful, but actually time runs on. But we'd like to hear a little bit. So next to person next to you, what does it feel like to grieve?
One, two, one.
I'm sure there were many different conversations covering many different aspects of grief there. But we're going to have just a short period of feedback. The microphone's going to come round. What does it feel like to experience grief? Anyone want to kick us off?
One feeling that I know is regret. Regret of what you didn't manage to say or do.
Thank you, brother. Regret, yeah. Other, yes.
Numbness and greyness.
Thank you, yes. And at the back there. Yeah. Oh, two microphones.
So I felt a lot of anger. Like, why did it ever be allowed to happen?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And it can be sometimes quite hard to admit to that, but a lot of us do feel angry at grief. Anyone else? Yes.
It's like you've entered a parallel universe, like your world shifted. It's just not the same anymore.
Yes.
You hadn't realised what your world was until that happened.
Yes, it does change everything, doesn't it? Like a loss of someone close. Yes, down the front here.
Where?
Lady in the middle there.
Thank you.
Guilt and deep-seated physical pain.
Thank you. Thank you for drawing our attention to the physicality of grief. Lovely. One more over there. Thank you very much.
Unpredictable about the moment you think you've
conquered a little bit of it. It comes back in waves at unbelievable times.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for helping us segue into my next slide so brilliantly. Thank you very much. The author Diane Langberg describes grief as this. She describes it as a journey through a series of villages. And I love that imagery because there is a journeying sense to it. But unlike some descriptions of the grief process, it's not linear. It's a journey where you can go through lots of different villages. Sometimes you stay a long time in a village. Sometimes you only stay a little while in a village. Sometimes you circle back to that same village time and time again. It's a journey, but not a linear one. A slow one, a long one. And along the way, you stop off at villages like longing. I just wish things could be different. If only I could turn back time. I wish I could have said something different. You stop off in anguish, that unspeakable, overwhelming pain. There are no real words to describe it, just an outpouring, a scream, maybe a silent scream of the pain that is being felt. The anger that has been mentioned, sometimes anger at God, how could he possibly? Sometimes anger at the person who's left us. Sometimes anger at ourselves for what we did or didn't do. Guilt can be closely allied with that, but so often numbness and disbelief, and so much more. And as we go through the journey of grief, we can find ourselves for months in anger, and then weeks in grief, and then back to anger again, and then off to numbness, and back to longing, and all over the place. And if you are finding yourself walking that complex, convoluted path, coming back to the same village time and time again, please know you are normal. This is how grief works. It's painful. It's hard. It's a journey that none of us want to walk. But the thing about journeys is, whilst they may be convoluted and we may get lost sometimes and we may circle back to the same place, that's certainly been my experience in the Keswick Hills, like, sure, I've been here before. There is still a forward motion to it. There is still a journey to somewhere better, to somewhere good. Of course, the thing about journeys is we need to do them with a sense of direction. The thing about journeys is we do them best together. The thing about journeys is we know that one day they will end. And in Christ, we know that our journey will end somewhere good. I'm not going to take feedback from this, but just 1 minute with the person next to you. What strikes you about that journey imagery, that journeying through the villages? It may be you're familiar with that because you've read some of Diane Langberg's work already, but it might be new to you. Is that a helpful concept? Is that an unhelpful concept? I'll say, no feedback, just share your thoughts with someone next to you for a minute. Well, as Christians, one thing that can bring some comfort on our journey of grief, painful though it is that Jesus walked that journey himself. We're not trying to break new ground where Jesus has not been. He has walked that path. John 11 tells us the story of Jesus and Lazarus. The story of Jesus losing a beloved friend. Of Jesus hearing about the sickness of his friend and then slightly curiously delaying going to see him. Of Jesus's friend Lazarus, his beloved friend, dying. We see in that story that the death is the enemy. That actually there's a wrongness about death. You actually see in some of Jesus' words a real anger with death. It's interesting, you don't pick it up quite so much in the English. I'm going to sound like a Greek scholar. I'm not. I've stolen this completely from somebody else. But that Jesus wept term, it's not just a weeping of grief. It's a this is wrong. It's a weeping over something that is not right. And he is weeping over the wrongness of death in the world, not just the loss of a friend. We see in the story of Jesus and Lazarus, the sisters, Mary and Martha, left behind grieving. We see how Jesus and indeed the other people in the town deal tenderly with Mary and Martha, but we also see how their grief journey is actually different from one another. We know from other parts of the Bible that Mary and Martha had very different personalities, so it's not surprising that they grieved differently as well. The story gives us a glimpse of how to grieve well in our different characters. In that story, we see Jesus leading us through grief as he leads Mary and Martha through their grief. And we see him bring hope. Hope in only ways that Jesus can, as he shows himself not just to be a comforter and a friend, or a shepherd or a king, but the one and only who can conquer death and usher in a time when one day it will no longer have a sting. So how does Jesus encourage us to grieve? How do we walk that journey of grief between the villages? Well, I think the first thing I'd love us to wrestle with is that he encouraged Mary and Martha to be honest with him. In fact, they knew him so well, they loved him so well. It actually came quite naturally for them to be honest with him in their grief. See, Mary and Martha expressed their emotions very differently. One of them just pelted towards Jesus. If you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. Jesus, let's talk this through. The other one stayed at home. She had to be called out to see Jesus. She wasn't going out to see him. We're not quite sure what was going through her mind, but she was not running to Jesus. She had to be called. But both of them had big questions. They asked the why questions. If you'd been here, Jesus, the undertone is almost, why did you let this happen? You are the one person in the world who could have stopped this, and yet you didn't. Why did you choose to let my brother die? They didn't pretend they were okay. I mean, they didn't just sit in a corner. You know, they were, you know, scurrying around, you know, getting things organized. But they didn't pretend they were okay. They allowed their emotions to come out. They allowed themselves to ask big questions of Jesus. But often, as Christians, we find that hard. I was doing a conference in West Africa many years ago now. And I was talking about the loss of my parents. My parents died very close together. My father died in hospital. My mother died of a heart attack as we were getting ready for his funeral. It was not a week I would ever wish to relive. But I was telling this conference about how I desired to have my eyes on Christ and to persevere through and to know that he is good and to trust him, all of which is true. And then someone came up to me afterwards and said, Helen, I want to grieve like you, just praising God and not feeling sad. And I heard that reflected back to me, and I, what am I saying? What am I trying to do here? That's not healthy grieving. We do want to trust God. But we do want to praise him for the goodness, even in the hard times. But not at the expense of being honest about how sad we are. We need to be real and raw and open with the Lord and with the people that we trust around us. But sometimes it's hard. I'm not going to ask you to say this one out loud, but just take a moment. In your grief, what do you find it hard to say? What are the regrets that stick in your throat? What are the emotions that you don't want to admit to? When my parents died, because my dad's death was very medically controlled, we were able to say all the things we wanted to say to him. Dad, we love you. It's okay. Go and be with Jesus. We'll be fine. It's safe to go. My mum's death was rather less expected. My final words to my mum, the thing that I wanted to tell everyone in my friendship circle that I regretted at that period, but I didn't have the courage to say. My final words to my mum weren't what I said to my dad. It wasn't, I love you, go and be with Jesus, we'll be okay. My final words to my mum were, oh, mum, not today. Which in retrospect, she would have found hilarious. So I'm not entirely worried about that anymore. But that was what I couldn't share with my friends because I was too embarrassed to say. Many of us will have something. Actually, once we've said it, we'll usually find that the people around us will just nod and go, I get that. I'm sorry, that's hard. Let's grieve with honesty. Let's grieve prayerfully as well. Knowing that we can take those emotions, those feelings, those questions to the Lord. Now, I'm not being naive. When we are in the depths of grief, prayer does not come easily. Not for all of us, at least. Sometimes the words get choked in the tears. Sometimes we can't formulate a sentence particularly well. Sometimes we just are so tired that we can't quite concentrate at all. The Lord, as we were looking at yesterday, loves to hear our voice, though, and short prayers are fine. There is no prize for a long prayer. Just getting out the odd sentence here and there, using set prayers. I don't go to a church that's particularly liturgical, but actually, you know, the Anglican Church, the Presbyterian Church, other churches like that, that maybe some of you are here involved with, will have set prayers for grieving. Use them. Allow them to give life to your own words and thoughts. They're not that hard to find. Pray prayers from the heart. Ask the Lord why. Ask the Lord what the purpose of that was. He may not give you an answer, but he doesn't mind you asking. It's relationship building. Lament. Cry. Pour out your heart to the Lord, knowing that his comforting arms are around you as you weep. And pray prayers about the future. Not just, I wish the past were different, but Lord, lead me. Lead me into the future. We want to grieve in community as well. Grieve alongside others that know how to grieve, that are grieving, even if they don't know how. You know, one thing that strikes me about that Mary and Martha, that Jesus and Lazarus story, is how many people came to Mary and Martha in their time of grief. And part of that is culture, I know. You know, 21st century Britain is much more individualistic than first century where Jesus walked. But actually, they came and they wept with Mary and Martha. They were with them. And that will look different for us. But actually, we do need people around us. Jesus came as well. They wailed together. They spoke together. They walked together. There was community there. When Job lost so much, his friends came. I mean, his friends were useless on one level. But on another level, for those first few days, they just sat with him. And that was beautiful. We don't need to have the right words to say. We don't need to have that kind of knockout sentence that will make everything better for our friends. Most of us won't even remember the conversations in the first few days after a loss. But we remember people's presence. We remember who came. And the small acts of kindness, they absolutely make a difference. I remember at my mum's funeral. It was the same funeral team that did both funerals. And on that second funeral, they went through the usual routine of bringing in the coffin and turning round and leaving. And the head funeral director stopped, turned round and went back up to the coffin. I thought, what's gone wrong? And he just quietly lifted an arm, plucked out a yellow rose, wandered over to me and quietly whispered, never forget you're loved, and walked out of my life. I'm not sure I will ever see him again. I will never forget that moment. It wasn't something that you needed lots of training for. It was a simple act of kindness in the middle of grief. We can be that in community together. Again, no feedback on this, but why don't you take a couple of minutes to chat to the person next to you? If you're not in the depths of grief yourself at the moment, how can you move towards those who are? Even if you are in the depths of grief, is there a little way you can move towards others? If you are grieving, but are grieving maybe alone, what steps can you take to invite other people into that grieving process so that you are known and you can weep with those who weep? Just a minute and a half with the people next to you. I know there is a slight irony in encouraging you to talk about community and then stopping you talking to each other, but I'm going to bring you back. We do need each other when we're grieving. None of us are designed to walk the path of grief alone. And I know some of us have more ready-made people to walk alongside us than others. But for all of us, let's do what we can. We know that the Lord is with us to find others to walk alongside us as well. We've touched on this, but I did want to just reinforce this, that actually we grieve by crying as well. Crying is an entirely appropriate response to death. It's a Christ-like response to death. Now, we don't always have the tears at the surface. Sometimes they take a while to come. That's okay. People cry at different paces. But let's remember one thing, that tears are not a weakness. Strong faith cries. There is no one with a stronger faith than Jesus. And his tears flowed. We do not need to be ashamed of our tears. We can cry knowing that we are being Christ-like, or at least as Christ-like as any of us can be in this life. And he wept with a mixture of grief and anger. It's okay for us to weep with a mixture of grief and anger. Of course, we do have to be nuanced. Our anger is never as pure as his is. Ours is always mixed with other intentions. But anger and grief are appropriate. If we can't quite find the words, let's use the Psalms. The Psalms of Lament are in the Bible for a reason. We're designed to lament. Use the words of songs. There are many songs out there designed to help us lament. For me, sometimes I just find watching a sad film will help unlock the tears just a little bit. When they're kind of stuck because I'm rushing around doing other things and I know I've been pushing them down a bit. Just giving myself the space and the context to be somewhere sad helps the tears to flow. But we also want to grieve with hope, because we're Christians and Jesus does give us hope. Now that hope is going to look very different depending on who we have lost. Sometimes, and praise God for this, sometimes we have the hope of knowing that our loved one is with Christ. And that is a beautiful hope. Sometimes we can utter the word, better for them. Hard for us, but better for them. Sometimes we have the hope that maybe they did make a decision about their eternal destiny just before they died. We don't always know that. And we don't want to overpromise. But actually, whilst there is breath in someone's body, there is an opportunity to make a decision. For the thief hanging on the cross, he chose to follow Jesus just moments before he died. There is the possibility of that for those that we love. For others of us, we don't have that certainty. For others of us, the possibility of that does seem very small. And there's an additional pain to lament there. But actually, even there is still hope. There is the hope that the Lord will sustain us through our grief, because he is the God of all comfort. He doesn't go, oh my goodness me, you've fallen apart a bit, haven't you? I'm off. He is the God of comfort. He lavishes comfort on his children. He is not put off by our tears. He hears our wailing and his heart is moved. We have hope that there is life ahead of us. Now, this is not the same as moving on. Oh, how I hate the phrase moving on. How can you possibly move on if you have lost someone dear to you? Life will never be the same again. However, life does progress. And whilst it is not our task to move on, it is our task to find a way of doing life, carrying that loss in a way that doesn't overwhelm. That loss becomes part of our story. It comes part of our present. But it doesn't have to be so dominant that life is bad all the time. There may still be tears. There may still be lament. But there is hope for a life that is fulfilled. Hope for a life that contains love. Hope for a life that has purpose. Hope for a life that is rooted in Christ and therefore has goodness in it. We may always feel the pain, but it does not need to define us or overwhelm us. Of course, there is hope that death is defeated and that one day for us and all who are in Christ, there will be eternal life. Jesus conquered death for Lazarus in quite extraordinary ways. Not expecting a repeat of that, but through his death and resurrection, what we've been looking at all this week, death has been done away with. There is life eternal to come. There will come a moment where there is no more crying, no more mourning, no more pain. Just a minute with the person next to you again. Again, no feedback from this. What hope do you need to hear this week? From that list or from something else that you've heard this week? Because we've been talking a lot about resurrection. What hope do you need to cling on to in the coming days? Just a couple of minutes with the person next door. The Lord is a Lord of much hope. And how we need that hope in times of grief. Let's keep reminding ourselves of hope. Let's keep reminding each other of the hope of the resurrection. But also, as we think of how to grieve, slowly is the word that comes to mind. It's not a race. We will have bad days. We'll have bad weeks. We may even have bad months. And that is okay. It ebbs, it flows. We revisit the villages. We don't move on. But gradually, we do come to find a way of doing life without the person that we love. We find a way of doing life without them at our side. And that is something that takes a long time to explore. I guess one thing that it's important to encourage ourselves on is not to give up that quest of how to find out how to do it. Sometimes we try for a little while and then go, I can't work it out. Clearly just life can't be good or fulfilling without them. And we get stuck. But with our help from our friends, with the Spirit at work in our hearts, we can keep exploring, grieving slowly, lamenting, turning to our friends, working out how to do life well. And use some practical strategies along the way. A gentle routine is helpful. Not a heavy routine, but a gentle routine of just getting up each morning, of taking a little walk, of doing just one task on the huge long list of tasks that need to be doing, of taking care of ourselves, of turning to the Lord in prayer. Those little things help. Telling stories, journaling. I love sitting with people who have lost, not because it's a fun thing to do, because you learn so much about the one who is no longer with us. I love flicking through photo albums with friends when they have lost a spouse and just hearing the stories behind the photos. I love my old friend Daphne. She's with the Lord now. I loved flicking through her photo albums, and I only knew her as Daphne, riddled with arthritis, confined to the house. But after she went, the friends and I sat down and flicked through the photo albums of Daphne on the moped without a helmet, zooming around the countryside. And suddenly there was a whole new depth to her story that none of us knew. Let's tell the stories, let's enjoy the stories, let's write them down. We can mark key dates. Many of you will know that I got married relatively recently, 5 months ago now, very recently. And my husband is a widow, and I don't tend to tell his story. It's not my story to tell. But I know there are days when he wants to go to the grave to be with his first wife. And that's not that he doesn't love me. He loves me to bits. But there are days when he just needs to go and see her, because it was her birthday or their wedding anniversary or what would have been their silver wedding. There are days to mark, and we can allow people the liberty to do that. Let's not be ashamed. It doesn't have to be anything huge. Maybe just a flower. Something strategically placed, a memory, a piece of music that we used to love together. Something special. We can look after our bodies. Eating is hard. And I know that within the church, we like to take round big meals when people are struggling. My experience of receiving big meals in times of grief is the foxes got really fat that year. Let's get in the habit of taking round bowls of soup. Wholesome, well-made, tasty, not very filling. Easy to slip down, just pop in the microwave. We can help each other eat well, but let's not pretend we're going to be eating lots when we're grieving. We can give and receive help for paperwork. I mean, the paperwork after a loved one has gone to glory is just extraordinary. And I consider myself a relatively literate and articulate human being, but sometimes I read these sentences in these forms and go, I know every word in that sentence, but you put them in that order, and I've not got a clue what they mean. We can help each other out with those things. Counselling, bereavement support, peer support groups in the church can all be lovely. I thought I'd throw it open. If the microphones are around again, that would be quite handy. If anyone has got any tips of what has been helpful to them as they've been grieving, it doesn't have to be something big and impressive. But what has helped you in your times of grief? Something that you might share with others around? Does anyone have anything that they feel would be useful to pass on? Yes, at the front down here. Thank you.
A friend said to me, just take it a day at a time, and if that's too much, half a day at a time. And that was really helpful, just half a day.
Thank you. It's that slow pace, just one tiny step, isn't it? Doing what we can. Thank you. Yes, at the back, right at the back.
When my granddad died, I had some very close friends offer to come and help look after my young children so I could focus on my grief at the funeral. So they were still there with my close friends, but not my responsibility for that time.
Thank you. The importance of community and just doing life together in times of grief. Yes, at the front there.
My father died early in the morning of January the 1st. And by the time I settled my mother and went back, Evelyn and I went back to our house, our friends up the road were having a party. We knew that, a New Year's party. Mm. I went up to the party. Some people might think that's not a good way to remember my father. I didn't take part. I just sat there. Their friends were great, but I found that was helpful to me.
Thank you. And as you say, different people would make different choices in situations like that, but actually being with people that you know and love, that makes a big difference, doesn't it? Yeah, thank you.
When my daughter was dying, her best friend promised her that she would remember me on my birthday each year. So she sends me a birthday card to remind me of her friendship with my daughter, but also of my daughter in lieu of.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I lost my mum and dad 2 summers ago, 7 weeks apart. And I grieved in the normal way, shall we say. After the normal sort of grieving process, I began to switch from the grief at what I'd lost and move towards a gratitude for what I had had. So, you know, I was beginning to, in order to get past that heavy sadness, I started to be more thankful that I had had what I'd had from my parents in my life and began to accept. So I then got married for the first time in my life to a lady called Helen. And
not me, just to be clear.
Yeah. For those who can't see, it's not you, no. But a very similar story to yours.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing, brother. And gratitude is so important, isn't it? Gratitude to the Lord, gratitude for the people that we have shared our lives with. There are many other stories, I'm sure. Feel free to share them over coffee, but we won't do any more into the microphone today. But let's keep on grieving. And let's commit ourselves to grieving slowly, taking time, but committing ourselves to keeping growing through the grief. Now, I say without getting stuck. We'll all get stuck for a little while. That's the normal part and parcel of grief. But actually noticing or encouraging our friends and family to notice if we're getting a little bit stuck and to continue that journey forward at a slow pace. To keep on crying, but remembering hope. To keep on taking time, but keep on growing. To keep on missing the one who's gone, but not believing the lie that we can never have a life that flourishes again. To keep on asking God the big questions, but not in an accusatory way, knowing that he's our Father and is taking care of us as we ask. Acknowledging that we will be exhausted, but not giving up. And to keep doing those things until he calls us home. It may feel like it's forever that we're grieving, but it is only for now. And I use that word only very carefully because I know it doesn't feel like only. I know it feels huge. But we are not alone and we are not without hope. We are blessed to have a God of comfort and care, a God who has a future that he is leading us to, even amid the pain.